There we go. Okay, this interview is January 19th, 1984, with Mr.
R.H. Parkinson.
R.H. Parkinson. And at Mr. Parkinson's house on Fulton Road in Victoria. So if we could start, Mr. Parkinson, with when and where you were born.
I was born here in Victoria in 1916. At the Royal Jubilee Hospital. We lived on Hampshire Road in Oak Bay, and within weeks after I was born, my father left as a member of the armed services and went overseas. My mother took my older sister and myself to Cornwall, Ontario for a short period, and when the war was over, we came back to Vancouver, came back to Victoria. Again for a short period, during which time my father and an uncle operated a small confectionery store at the corner of Newport and Windsor, which was then the end of the Oak Bay car line. Following this, my father and my uncle went to Vancouver and rented a small residential hotel in the west end of Vancouver, which they operated for 5 years, and when they found they could make money, they built a hotel of their own in the west end of Vancouver, which they owned and operated until my father retired in 1944. As a result, I started school in Vancouver in the west end, did both public school and high school in the west end, following which I went to the University of British Columbia, where I graduated with a degree in arts, followed by postgraduate work in social work. When I'd finished my postgraduate work, I joined the services and was posted to the to the Royal Canadian Army Service Corps. I was sent to Victoria, to Gordon Head, as a cadet in July of 1942. I spent 3 months at Gordon Head, following which I was posted to the Army Service Corps Training Center at Red Deer, Alberta, where I spent the next 4 months. Following this training, I was sent overseas. We left Red Deer in February and traveled to New York City, where we sailed on the former Empress of Japan, which was then the Empress of Scotland, and proceeded to the United Kingdom unescorted. In England, I was stationed at Farnborough, which is adjacent to Aldershot, and again in an Army Service Corps training center where we took some advanced training. When I had finished that training, I was sent to a unit as a supernumerary officer to get experience in the field. I stayed with this unit for a period of time and then was returned to the reinforcement unit. Again, following this, I was sent out again to be what was known as a rear party officer, a rear party officer for an Army Service Corps unit, which was being sent to Italy. My job there was to take over all the equipment and return it to the Ordnance Corps. Shortly after this, I was warned for draft and was sent to Italy. I traveled on an old Belgian freighter and arrived in Naples. I can't remember the month. On disembarking from Naples, we took a train to Avellino, which was a general Canadian reinforcement depot. I stayed there for approximately a month and then was sent to an advanced reinforcement depot, where I stayed again for approximately a month and was finally posted to 83 Company, Royal Canadian Army Service Corps, which was the service corps company servicing the 1st Canadian Armed Brigade. I joined the company in Ortona, which just after the battle for Altona, we spent the remainder of the winter there, and in the spring, in the early spring, the unit and the brigade, along with the 1st Canadian Division, were moved from Altona, or from the Altona sector, to the Valley of the Volturno, which was west and a little bit south of Rome. We spent actually a very pleasant time that spring, at the same time knowing that we were preparing for, in quote, something. But during that time, I had the opportunity of going to Pompeii on a one-day excursion and seeing the ruins, which I enjoyed. But as I say, we were preparing for something. We were accumulating a lot of ammunition and petrol for the tank brigade. I can't remember the date.
This would have been the push through the line around Monte Cassino?
Yes, that's right. And on the night of the first assault on the Hitler line, we were up nearly all night because of the tremendous barrage that the Allied artillery put on. It was something the likes of which I had never heard before or experienced. The sky was lit up almost like fireworks, and we realized that that the following morning the assault would take place, which it did, and our tanks proceeded to assault the Hitler line. The Cavalry Tank Regiment suffered considerable loss, and I lost some friends who had originally been with the Cavalry Tank Regiment, but who had come back to Canada and attended Gordon Head Training School with me, and who were then posted back as young officers to the Cavalry Tank Regiment. As the this battle was I can't think of the word that I want to use. In this battle, the Germans used their famous 88mm anti-tank gun, which they had put in pillboxes, which were built of concrete but extremely low to the ground, and which were extremely difficult to sight, and consequently they could pick off our tanks very readily, which they did. And for me it was a very graphic and horrible sight as we moved forward within the next few days to continue to service the armor brigade, to see these tanks strewn across the fields with holes in them, which the 88 millimeters had caused. It's my understanding that when these 88 millimeter shells pierce the armor, they then explode and everything in the tank goes up. Mm. Following the Hitler line was the assault on Monte Cassino, which we really didn't take part in, and which I understand was carried out mainly by the Polish division and the Americans. Once Monte Cassino had been secured, we moved forward quite rapidly to within 2 or 3 miles of the gates of Rome, and it's my understanding that the 1st Canadian Division arrived at the gates of Rome prior to anybody else, but were stopped by the army commander, who was General Mark Clark, because for political reasons, I believe, the Allies wanted the Americans to enter Rome first to be the, in quotes, conquering heroes. We attempted to enter Rome, but were stopped by American military police, but our OC, who was Bob Robarts, the brother of John Robarts, the former Premier of Ontario, had an idea that we could get in by circumventing the military police, which we did. We spent a very pleasant day in Rome.
This was before the American troops had actually come in, was it?
No. The American troops were then in and had been for several days. We had been sitting on the outskirts, as I say, prevented from going in. Very shortly, we moved around Rome and started north toward Lake Trasimeno. The fighting was then somewhat sporadic. It was always interesting to me that the Germans blew every bridge, of which there were literally hundreds in Italy, and also had a machine which would be hooked onto the end of a train and would pull the ties up as it went north, thereby preventing the Allies from making use of the rail for supply purposes. In addition, they would put a small charge about every 200 or 300 yards along the track and blow a piece of track out to make sure that no trains could operate. This meant that the Canadian bridging, the Canadian Engineers Corps and bridging companies had a tremendous amount of work putting Bailey bridges over every little chasm that we came to as we moved along. North of Lake Trasimeno, we continued in relatively brisk pace until we got to Florence. In Florence, we were billeted in the home of an Italian count who was quite gracious to us. While in Florence, I contracted infectious hepatitis and was sent to hospital. Fortunately for me, I ended up in a British hospital in Perugia, which had been an Italian sanatorium built by Mussolini. Actually, there were five of us from the brigade that went down on the same day because there was a virtual epidemic of hepatitis at the time. We were stayed in the hospital for 3 weeks, at the end of which the British doctor suggested that we then go to the Canadian convalescent camp at Amalfi, which we didn't want to go to because we knew that once we were there, then we would be fed back into the reinforcement stream, and where we would end up, we had no idea. We persuaded the British authorities to release us from hospital and told them that we could well find our way back to our own units, which we did. When I arrived, my position as adjutant had already been filled, but Bob Robarts told me that he would keep me around for a while, but eventually he would have to report that I was supernumerary and then I would be sent to the reinforcement depot. In the meantime, however, another of the young officers came down with hepatitis, and I was given his job, so I was able to stay with the unit through the rest of the Italian campaign and move on up into Northwest Europe. Following our stay in Florence, we moved north to a town called Borgo San Lorenzo, which was in the foothills of the mountains just south of Bologna. The Allies then were getting ready to assault Bologna, and the tanks from the brigade, and in particular the Calgary Regiment, moved up into the mountains, and the tanks were dug in and because of the winter conditions, could not be used as tanks, but were used as artillery pieces. I had the job of taking literally hundreds of tons of ammunition up to the regiment. This was a very arduous job because of the steep climb and the very poor roads that we had to use. The ammunition was never used, and I don't know whatever happened to it. I don't know how they'd ever get it back down, but it was a very grueling winter. It was very cold. Our billets were in tents, which our people heated by making small stoves out of ammunition boxes. This resulted in a number of tents being burned down because of the heat that would be generated through the chimneys, which were made of shell casings. I was fortunate enough to have a room in a farmhouse close by, but which was extremely cold because the farmhouses had no heat in them. As the spring began to come about, the Calgary Regiment was drawn back from facing Boulogne and assigned to support the British 1st Division, which was then assaulting the Lombardy Plains from Ravenna. I moved my platoon up behind the Calgary Regiment in order to supply them with petrol, ammunition, and supplies, and came under command of the British commander of the Royal Army Service Corps for the time I was there. The Allies began to move forward on the Lombardy Plains, and then suddenly I got a signal from my unit telling me to report with my platoon to Leghorn. I could only guess at the time that we were going to leave Italy, which turned out to be true. Both the Calgary Regiment and my platoon then were withdrawn, and we made the rather long convoy from Ravenna across Italy to Leghorn. I was there 2 or 3 days. Our own unit had been assigned to ships prior to my arrival, so I was told that I would follow, which I did, along with the Calgary Regiment, on a U.S. landing tank landing craft. This was a particularly enjoyable voyage because the Americans had real butter and real eggs, which I hadn't had for a good long time, and so we rather gorged at breakfast on bacon and eggs and toast with real butter. Once we landed in Marseille, we formed a convoy and moved up through France, around Paris and up into to Belgium. Our unit was located in a small town close to the southern border of Belgium by the name of Erzel. The platoon was billeted in homes, which were our first billets ever after several years in Italy. It was a...
Would
you have a cup of coffee?
Yeah, that's... Thank you.
Yeah, please. The men in the platoon or in the unit really enjoyed their stay there because, as I say, this was the first time they were in home billets and with people who were not, in quotes, the enemy as the Italians had been. I was particularly fortunate in being billeted with a family who owned a hardware store, and who lived upstairs in an apartment. There was a mother and father and three girls. The mother and father moved out of their bedroom and gave it to me, which was extremely kind of them. I have kept up a correspondence with this family ever since. The mother and father have since died, but I still get Christmas cards from some of the girls. In 1976, I visited England and the continent, and made a point of going to Erso and looking up the girls, who of course are now married and with children of their own. After our stay in Erso, we were posted to just south of Nijmegen, and became part of a mini division, which was made up of the tank brigade, plus one brigade of infantry, and were active on an island between Arnhem and Nijmegen. We moved onto the island and began moving westward, mostly fighting Dutch SS troops. This was quite slow going and was obviously coming close to the end of the war. About 2 or 3 weeks prior to the end of the war, a month before the end of the war, I was called in and was given instructions to take my vehicles to a food depot and to mount a white flag on each of the vehicles. It turned out that the people in Western Holland were starving and were being supplied by airdrops by the British RAF. Unfortunately, the drops were not successful in that much of the food ended up in the hands of black marketeers and was not getting to the people to whom it was intended. Through some sort of channels, arrangements were made that the Germans would permit Allied vehicles to take food through their lines to Western Holland to feed the Dutch people who were starving and whom the Germans wow, this looks good. Do you take cream, sir?
Yes, please.
We loaded our vehicles with the food and proceeded through the German lines. It was interesting and somewhat scary as we passed German soldiers in slit trenches, fully armed, and probably they were as interested or as frightened as we were. In any event, I was I was in command of the first platoon that took food through to the Dutch people. We offloaded the food at the side of the road and turned it over to some kind of Dutch authorities, and I really don't know exactly what their role was, except that they took charge of the food, and we did not at any time have any contact with the Germans. This went on for approximately a week when I was again called into our headquarters and advised to go to a small town called Hellendoorn in northeastern Holland and was to prepare billets for our unit, which I was advised, had been chosen to join what was then known as the Berlin Brigade. Apparently, the Canadian authorities, along in consort with the Americans and British and French, were going to send representative groups to Berlin to partake in a victory parade. Our company was chosen to represent not only the Army Service, the Canadian Army Service Corps, but also the Armored Corps. It was an interesting experience arranging these billets. The unit finally arrived, and we were put through very vigorous training, which was very hard on the men that were with us. We were back to parade square work, painting vehicles, dressing up in new uniforms, doing march pasts and the sort of thing that you had done years ago in training. The men found this quite arduous because they had been very much used to having much their own way in terms of the way they lived and the type of housing they'd had throughout the Italian campaign. Bob Robarts was, in my opinion, an excellent commander in that when we were in Italy, he simply said that I want you to get the job done and I won't interfere. As a consequence, we bartered with Americans particularly for such things as tents and uniforms and boots, etc. These all had to go by the board when we were involved in the Berlin Brigade. We were told at the time that after the period of training we would go with the Allies to Berlin for approximately a month and then we would all be returned to Canada to put on a show in Ottawa and then we would be discharged. This was very appealing to almost all of us in that we had been away from home for a long, long time and many of us knew that we would not be home for some considerable period of time had we simply stayed with the 1st Canadian Army. About the time we were ready to move forward to Berlin, we were told that the whole thing had been canceled and that we would be moved to Western Holland, where we would be put in first-class billets and then await our turns to go home. I was responsible for moving the Edmonton Regiment, who were representing the Infantry Corps in the Berlin Brigade, to far west of Holland, which I did. And on the return to where I was supposed to go, it turned out that things had been changed and I was actually lost. We were finally located and not ending up in billets, as we had promised, but ending up in a big sand field. This was a disturbing time because the men had been promised a number of things which had not been fulfilled, and they became very upset. The war was over, and they really didn't care anymore. The number of vehicle accidents was tremendous. The drinking offenses were very serious, and all in all, it was a rather bad time. However, they eventually found us billets, which turned out to be quite good. Shortly after, I was notified to return to Canada, but not told why. I was, of course, happy to get this advice and set off to England and eventually got home to Canada in August of 1945. It took me, I went on leave and went to the old Hotel Vancouver to find out why I had been returned. Nobody seemed to know, but eventually I found out that because of my social work background, I'd been brought home to be a social service officer Calgary. I was very unhappy about this, having just arrived back, particularly in light of the fact that a number of people who had been at university with me and who had not been out of Canada were being posted from places like Calgary and Regina to Vancouver, and I felt I was entitled to stay in Vancouver. However, the army prevailed and I ended up in Calgary as a very unhappy soldier. I couldn't find accommodation for myself and my family, since my wife came from Moose Jaw, we decided that she was best to go home to Moose Jaw with our son, and that I would try to get there as often as I could. Eventually, I wangled a transfer to Regina, and for the remainder of my service, I commuted from Moose Jaw to Regina every day to help in the discharge stream. The purpose of the social service officers at that time was to help with soldiers who were having marital problems at the time of discharge. Many Canadian soldiers, because of the long stay in the UK particularly, had formed alliances with women over there to the detriment of their families in Canada. At the same time, the women who had been left behind also got involved in alliances, and this made for all kinds of problems. However, on July the 19th, 1946, I was offered a position with the Federal Department of National Health and Welfare, and I took my discharge, and that's it. There's just a couple of other things I wanted to say about Italy. The Italian campaign was carried out by a myriad of a number of different countries. The 1st Canadian Armed Brigade were assigned as army troops, which means that they were under the command of the army commander, which in the beginning was General Alexander, and then latterly General Mark Clark. And being army troops, we were assigned to support whoever the army commander dictated, and consequently we worked with such diverse groups as Poles, Indians, Americans, and French. After Ortona,